I'm Rach Hartzenberg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 137 for the weekend starting Friday, 13 November 2015.
Friday the 13th. Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central. You'll find South Africa's best technology journalism.
That's right, Duncan. No headlines like, she lost a job, her husband, and a house in 6 years of hell. Terabyte Tokoloshi.
That is a genuine front page headline from the Daily Sun.
Only in South Africa.
On Talk Central this week, we chat about MTN's ongoing woes, as well as Telkom's interest in buying Cell C.
Also this week, we chat about AfriHost's voice packages and we look at web browsers, specifically Firefox coming to iOS.
Before we get to all of that, though, we need to pay the bills. We'll be back just after this.
Hush, little baby, don't say a word. Daddy's gonna buy you a mockingbird. And if that mockingbird don't sing, Daddy's gonna download you a bazillion things.
With Fat Pipe from Vox Telecom, you get free data between midnight and 6 a.m. every night. That's an unshaped high-speed internet lullaby for the ears. To get yours, visit voxtelecom.co.za.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Rach?
How's it, Duncan?
Good stuff. It's been a while since we sat around this table.
Yeah, it's been too long, actually. We need to get back into the swing of things.
Get back into the swing of things. Do put out quite a few episodes before the end of the year still, which is rapidly approaching.
Scary. I mean, there's only a few weeks until Christmas, and 2 weeks after that, it's end of the year. It's phenomenal.
Madness. Are you going away?
I might do a little beer excursion.
Beer excursion,
yeah. But I'm saving all my I don't want to say leave time, because that's not how I work, but I'm saving my time for my wedding next year. So,
oh, right. Have you got a date?
It's happening soon, end of January.
Mine's in March. So.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Yeah. The year of the wedding.
We'll see you on honeymoon.
Oh, yeah.
Good. Well, there's lots to cover because we haven't recorded for a while, and the big story of the last 3 weeks now, I think it's been 3 weeks, is obviously MTN and the huge problem they've got up in Nigeria. I'm sure you've been following the story, but for those who've just returned from holiday on Mars, it's a hell of a story. They've been fined $5.2 billion, which at the current exchange rate is about 75 billion rand. Massive money by the Nigerian Communications Commission for belatedly cutting off 5 million customers who were not registered under the Nigerian version of RICA, the SIM card registration law. And the news of this, which broke in Nigeria before MTN announced it to the market, sent the share price plummeting, and it hasn't recovered. I see even today, Friday the 13th, it's still under pressure, sitting at around 144 rand a share, down from over 190 rand before this problem started. They've lost about 70, 80 billion rand in market capitalization in that time, so greater than the actual quantum of the fine. No resolution in sight. It's cost the job of the group CEO, who resigned last week, and the former CEO, who's highly respected by the markets, Patuma Tleko, who was non-executive chairman, has returned as interim CEO. His official title is executive chairman. And he's now off to Nigeria to try and sort out this mess. No sign whatsoever whether the Nigerians are going to ease up on the fine. The fine is ridiculous. I mean, it's the biggest fine, from what I can ascertain, in the history of telecoms anywhere in the world, imposed by a regulatory authority, and possibly the biggest fine ever imposed by a regulatory agency.
Well, they're trying to make an example out of MTN, it seems like.
It could be that. It's difficult to know. I mean, the Nigerian market is difficult to ascertain, especially from a distance. But what we do know is that the Nigerian economy is in a lot of trouble, and that the government hasn't been able to raise tax revenues because of the collapse in the oil price over the past year. It's fallen from above $100 to around $44, the Brent crude oil price. And this has had a huge impact on their revenue-raising capabilities as a country. Mm. And there's been some speculation that this is actually about raising money in the absence of that oil revenue, trying to make up for the lost revenue. And there may be some truth to that. Some analysts say, that's likely. Others say it seems unlikely. But there's no doubting the fact that there's a lot of pressure on that economy and on that government. The second thing is they have a new government there. Good luck, Jonathan, the previous CEO, is out, and there's a new guy in charge, Muhammadu Buhari, who has only just in the last few days appointed a cabinet, despite the fact that he's been president for, I think, 6 months already.
Sure.
And so the regulator may have been acting in a bit of a vacuum because there was no political oversight. So it could have been a case of bureaucrats simply, you know, implementing the letter of the law rather than the spirit of the law, and imposing the maximum fine that they could impose without sort of thinking of the consequences. And the consequences are very serious, not just for MTN. There's a serious consequence for South Africa because it could have a big impact on the tax that MTN pays the South African government, because MTN is a very big, very profitable company. But it also could have and will have, I think already is having, a very big impact, a negative impact on foreign investors' perceptions of Nigeria.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to go there.
No, if you're a company thinking about investing in the telecom space or any other space for that matter, and you see a Nigerian authority imposing a fine that's completely out of all proportion and completely unjustified, sure, impose a fine on them, but not impose a fine that makes sense, not a fine that is completely out of all proportion to the offence. I think foreign investors are going to say, well, you know, is it safe to do business in that country? You know, if MTN can have a ridiculous fine like this imposed on it, maybe we'll go somewhere else. If we're looking at Africa, perhaps we'll go invest in Kenya or South Africa or somewhere else.
But MTN's license was renewed in Nigeria as well a few days later, wasn't it?
It was. Their operating spectrum license, I think they called it. I think it was the 900 and 1800 megahertz bands. MTN immediately played this up and said, this is evidence that we have a good relationship with the regulator. Mm. But, you know, it may have just been a bureaucratic process that was in there. I doubt it had anything to do with the fine. It was just going to be announced anyway. But I suppose it's positive that the Nigerians don't want to get rid of MTN, although I'm sure MTN has given some thought to the idea of getting out of Nigeria after seeing this fine.
Yeah, what's next? What's going to happen next? I didn't see how long after, what was a time period where between when they should have cut those numbers and when they actually did? Is it a question of years or months?
No, I think it was a question of weeks, if not days. The deadline was 11 August, and then MTN put out a trading statement. I forget exactly when it was. It was fairly recent. Let me see if I can find it quickly. But it wasn't long after then, in which they said they'd cut off 5.1 million SIMs. So it has to be the same 5.1 million. They put out a... let me just see if I can find it now. Just having a look on ShareNet here.
The Bible of all
quarterly
things trading.
Update. Here we go. 22nd of October, they put out a quarterly update for the period ended 30 September. And in that quarterly update, they said that they'd cut off those 5.1 million. So this happened sometime between 11 August and 22 October. So a matter of just over 2 months.
Sure. Yeah, it's an interesting position, and it'll be like you said. We need to see what's going to happen here because the implications of how this plays out.
Yeah,
could have repercussions for South Africa.
Yeah,
and investment in Nigeria.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, shareholders are going to be watching this, I think, with a great deal of interest because the share prices, as I said, has come down quite significantly. If that fine does get reduced significantly, then there's obviously a huge upside to the share price. But if they don't manage to do that, then they could even come under more pressure. But very difficult times for MTN. Okay, so the other big news in the telecom sector is the confirmation from Telkom, confirmation, I guess, of the worst-kept secret in the industry this year, that they're in talks to buy Cell C, which is interesting.
Yeah.
This comes after Telkom failed to do this RAN radio access network sharing agreement with MTN that was blocked by the competition authorities, which I was very surprised by after they approved the Vodacom acquisition of Neotel. But Telkom now deciding to go after Cell C and confirming this week that they are conducting a due diligence investigation of the company, so looking at its books and seeing what it's really worth. Although reportedly there's disagreement between Telkom and Cell C parents, Oje Telecom, about what the company's actually worth. The numbers that I've been reading are from various wire services that claim to have access to this information. Telkom apparently putting on something like 14 billion rand on the table, and Ogier looking for something north of 20 billion rand. So a big difference in valuation there.
Valuation or negotiation?
It's negotiation, yeah. It's, well, it's the value they believe the company, sure, you know, what sure. they believe the company's worth. You know, that's a 6 to 8 billion rand difference is a heck of a difference. So I don't know if they kind of reach.
It's one MTN fine in Nigeria.
Yes. It's actually less than that.
One unit.
It's about half of an MTN fine. No, a third of an MTN fine in Nigeria. That puts things in perspective, doesn't it? A third of a CLC. three times a CLC. It's an interesting move. I mean, does CLC really need this acquisition? From what I hear, they're actually doing reasonably well now. They seem to have put the loss-making days behind them.
Which is why they're obviously asking for a premium on and they believe that they can get a lot more.
Yeah. Of course, they're still sitting on a mountain of debt, which is CLC's biggest issue. Some people suggest it's around 14 billion rand. Whether debt is part of that valuation or not, I think it has to be. So, I don't know. Is Telkom asking for, offering 14 billion rand less the debt, making it 0 rand? Are they bidding 0 rand to take on the debt? I'm not sure. But
what would they get? I mean, it's just the technology.
They're going to get access to subscribers, basically. The problem with Telkom is that they came very late into the mobile market, They've got less than 2% of the market. They've got a good network, particularly for data. And CLC's got the customer base. Its network has improved, but its network is not the greatest. It's got the customer base. I think 22 million customers was the last number I saw from CLC. So they've grown massively in the last 3 years, actually getting quite close to MTN's market share. So I think it's about buying customers. They'd also get a network of base stations. Although a lot of their base stations are sold to American Tower Corporation, so the physical infrastructure they don't own. They still own the active components on those towers. I guess it's really about buying market share and getting bulk. And it could be a good deal. I mean, Telkom Mobile looks fairly unsustainable at its size. If you combine these two companies, you're going to end up with three players in the market with about a third each. CLC/Telkom, MTN, and Vodacom. Vodacom a bit bigger. Maybe they've got about half the market, with the other two fighting out for 25%. But I don't know. It's an interesting proposition. I think the thing that Telkom shareholders are going to be watching is that Telkom doesn't overpay, because that could... you settle it with debt, or Telkom could come to those shareholders, in fact, and ask them to pay for the acquisition through a rights issue, which will end up diluting their shares potentially. But interesting situation. I'm not sure whether I'm in favour or against the idea of a deal like that, but let's see what happens. They first need to agree on a price. Before it goes anywhere. I mean, it still has to go to the CASA and the Competition Commission and all the rest of it. So it's going to take at least a year even if they do agree on a price.
But it does seem like Telkom may soon have another MVNO that it could sink its teeth into, I think, with the launch of Afrihost and their mobile offering.
You mean compete against?
Competing.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. You've had a look at it. What are they offering?
Yeah, I got, as an Afrihost subscriber, I got an email to notify me that I've got kind of like a preview access or early access. I can sign up for a package, and I also get 10 gigs free data if I do so. I haven't done so yet, but just looking at the packages they offer, there are 8 that I can see at the moment, starting from a mobile extra small, which gives you plus minus 50 minutes, which is about 40 rands airtime, and 1 gigabyte of mobile data for 99 rand a month. And the packages...
So just read that again.
So it's about 50 minutes of voice time, so it's about 40 rands worth of airtime.
Yeah.
Plus 1 gigabyte of mobile data for 99 rand a month.
That's pretty aggressive.
And that, if I just jump a few, if I go to mobile large...
Is that on network voice, or is that voice to any network?
It should be voice to any network from what I've seen.
I'd imagine it is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The mobile large package for $3.99 gives you 200 minutes, 160 rand worth of airtime, and 5 gigs of mobile data, which is actually not a bad if you look at what 5 gigs of mobile data would cost you.
Yeah.
The biggest package I've got in their lineup is a mobile 4 XL, which gives you 1,200 minutes. It's about 950 rand.
Who the hell needs 1,200 minutes of voice? That's insane.
And 10 gigabytes of mobile data for $1,499. If I compare kind of what I'm spending a month on my package, I would be comparative to a mobile 2 XL giving me 7 gigs of data, 500 minutes at 400 rand worth of airtime for about 750, which is roughly what I'm paying for my current MTN SIM card.
Yeah.
But I'm not getting near that amount of mobile data.
Prices are pretty good. Those are handset exclusive prices, I'm sure.
Yeah, obviously this is, and there's month to month, so you don't sign up for
contracts. Oh, that's good. Yeah, I'm just thinking what I pay on Vodacom. I mean, I'm on a 250 minute or so a month, and I get 1.5 gigs of data, and I'm, for the privilege, I think I'm paying about $500. So for the same price, I'll be getting about 3 times the data. Mm. Same amount of minutes, 3 times the data. Yeah, well, that is a good deal.
It certainly, I mean, from what I've seen initially, this definitely looks like a good deal for anybody who kind of wants to change up their package offering and make sure that they pay less a month for more value.
I see the voice and data numbers are kind of linked to each other. They both grow through the range of offerings. You know, what I'd love to see is an option where you have, if you only want 100 minutes a month, but you get 10 gigs of data.
Yeah, we control your voice minutes.
It'd be nice like F&B does with its MVNO, where you can just literally slide along and select, I want this many SMSs, this much data, and this much voice.
Yes, yes.
You know, calculate how much I'm going to pay.
It'll be interesting to see the backend for this, because AfriHost has got this very cool app that or backend access that can allow you to modify your package, add more data, add more voice.
Mm.
And if they get that right, as well as what they do with their DSL offerings or the data offerings, I think users will really love this package and what they have to offer.
Yeah.
It seems like it's a very simple solution, affordable prices. I guess I just need to get some subscribers on it now and get voice, traditional voice users to look at AfriHost as a voice supply, not just a data supply.
Yeah, quite interesting. So, I mean, they've effectively become an MVNO here on MTN's network. So, effectively, they're the first MVNO on MTN.
Interesting, yeah.
I wonder if this is a test before MTN launches more MVNOs on its platform.
Yeah, it
could very well be. Anyway, the wind is picking up quite nicely here. One of the joys of recording a podcast outside. I guess it's also testing the quality of this Yeti microphone we used to do the podcast. I hope in the after effect there isn't too much wind noise on the mic, but apologies if there is. What else is happening? I want to chat about Firefox. What browser do you use on your PC?
Chrome throughout.
Okay.
Yeah.
And on your phone?
Also Chrome.
You've got an iPhone.
Yeah.
I used to use Chrome until very recently, and I've ditched it on every platform I use, and I've gone to Firefox. Mostly because Chrome seemed to have some sort of problem with it. It could have been a plugin. It probably was a plugin, in fact, to be fair. It was consuming gigabytes and gigabytes of data every day on my desktop. Hmm. And I just decided to hell with this. I'm getting rid of this thing. On Windows at least, it spawns so many processes all over the place that, you know, just to uninstall the thing, you have to go into the task manager and kill about 40 processes.
Mine's running at about 8 gigs of memory at the moment.
8 gigs, that's insane.
But I've got a lot of tabs open in all fairness. But
that is crazy.
Still,
Anyway, Firefox probably isn't your best bet if you want to move away from a memory hog. But
they've improved a lot. Yeah, I mean, they've kind of gone back to where they started, which was a really good alternative browser with some really good features built in.
Yeah, so I'm using it as my exclusive browser now on Windows and on my Android phone. And now on my iPad as well. I've just installed it. It's come out this week. And it looks pretty good. I haven't really had a chance to play around with it extensively, but it's got all the features you expect in the desktop one, including the sync application, so you can sync all your tabs and bookmarks and browser history and all the rest of it, which Chrome offers natively as well now. And also the private browsing mode. Of course, Chrome has that as well. So, you know, if you're happy with Chrome, there's probably no reason for you to move to Firefox, but I decided to just make the switch. I used to be a Firefox user back in the day, and I always felt a bit loyal to the platform. And I moved to Chrome when Chrome emerged. And I've gone back, and I'm kind of happy with it. a couple of niggles here and there. I don't think the prediction in the URL bar is as good on Firefox as it is on Chrome. Chrome, you know, obviously using the Google search engine to give you suggestions as you type, which Firefox can do, but it's not as good at it as Chrome. But apart from that, I found all the same plugins that I need. You know, most of the plugins that are available on Chrome are also available on Firefox. You know, I've got an RSS reader built into it, so I can, you know, keep tabs on other news sites, that sort of thing. It's pretty good, and I've now installed it on my iPad, and I think I'm going to give it a bash on there as well. I haven't uninstalled Chrome off my iPad yet, but I may well still do so.
It's well worth checking out. I mean, Firefox is the original alternative browser, and I always have a lot of respect and love for them. And it's good to see that they're finally giving Apple Mobile some attention.
Yeah.
I think I'll definitely try that as well and see how it fares against Chrome.
Yeah.
But it'll have to blow me away for me to move away from Chrome.
Yeah,
at this point, I've just been very happy with that browser.
Yeah. Even when it's showing 8 gigs of your RAM.
How much
RAM is consuming as
well? Well, I've got a little taskbar app called iStat Menus installed. Yeah. It was one of my picks a few podcasts ago.
I remember.
So it's well worth checking out.
Okay. I was wondering if there's an easy way for me to do it here, just to check what Firefox is using, but I guess not. Cool. Yeah, I mean, the browser market's interesting. Do you use a Mac? Do you use Safari at all?
Never.
No,
the only time that I touch Safari is when Apple or my mobile phone opens it up automatically on a link or something.
Oh, right.
But yeah, I've never. I don't know. I don't have anything against Safari. It's literally just I've never, between Firefox and Chrome, I've really had all my browser needs satisfied, and I've been very happy with that so far.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Safari's got some really interesting things built in for the Mac platform, but again, you know. When I'm browsing the internet, I trust Google, and I trust, obviously, I need to trust my web browser, and the two, I think, work well together, especially that they're Google-based.
Yeah. I may end up going back to Chrome at some point, but so far I've been on Firefox exclusively, except on my iPad, where it wasn't available until yesterday. I've been on for about, I think, 6 weeks now, and no problems. I've felt no need to go to another browser, so...
It will actually be interesting. What I'll do is I'll install it and then also compare the memory from a day-to-day use and see how much more it uses.
Mm.
It'll be good to see if it is actually a little bit more optimized.
But anyway, if you want to check it out, check out Firefox for iOS. Go check it out in the App Store. Right. I think let's do our winners and losers. Let's start with our loser this week because we've spoken about it already, and I think we should just move on from the story. it's obviously MTN. They haven't handled this, in the best way. They didn't communicate initially to the market sufficiently, and I think still they need to communicate more than they have. But I suppose they're in a bit of a difficult position trying to negotiate with the Nigerians. I saw one analyst referring to what's happening as a Nigerian shakedown. I guess they're busy with hostage negotiations. So I suppose it's difficult to. You don't want to be seen to be having a negotiation with the Nigerian authorities through the media. Understand that, but there's still questions over the way they've communicated. In fact, they're facing an investigation by the JSE over whether they reported the whether they first disclosed the initial information in time, and whether insider trading took place on the back of the information that was actually in the market earlier in the day. It seems unlikely. The information was in the market, so everyone had the possibility of trading on it. So I'm not sure it was insider trading, but they're our loser this week, MTN, and its shareholders for that matter. And our winner this week, I don't know if you've had a chance yet to play around with Steam since it got RAND pricing a few days ago.
I haven't played with it yet, but I've read about this and I love what they've done.
Yeah.
Absolutely love what they've done.
What I love is that the pricing is in many cases cheaper than what it was when it was dollar pricing.
Yeah. And then we can buy games for cheaper than most countries in the world if you bring your dollars here and buy with RAND.
Yeah. Which is great. I mean, I'm waiting for Just Cause 3 to come out on the 1st of December, and that was priced in the store at $53.99. I'm just going to fire up a calculator here. 53.99. I think the RAND is currently at 14.3. That's 700. Sorry, hang on. I pressed the wrong button. What did I say? Let's call it $54 times 14.3 is 772 RAND. That's what the old price. That was the price. That's the dollar pricing in the dollars that we saw a week ago in the Steam store for the Just Cause 3 launch on the 1st of December. Pre-order price. The pre-order price now in Rand is 449 Rand.
Wow. That is incredible.
Yeah. So it's over 300 Rand off.
That's going to make a lot of South African gamers very, very happy. And it makes a lot of sense. I mean, if the exchange rate negatively impacts, you know a society of gamers that probably half of them won't be able to afford 1,000 Rand games for much longer. It's good to see this.
Yeah. Let's hope it stays that way. That's fantastic. In fact, PC games in South Africa have always tended to be cheaper than overseas. But we certainly pay full price for console games here if you go into a store. I mean, the price of a new PS4 or Xbox One game now is insane. You know, $8.99, even $109.99 in some cases. Whereas historically, the PC game prices have been much lower. I think for a long period of time, they were sitting at $2.99. For new games, I think they've moved up to around $3.99 or $4.99 for some titles now, but still significantly cheaper than what you'd pay if you went into a retail store in the US.
And unfortunately, this exchange rate just hasn't been kind to us. I mean, it's horrible. I spoke to one of the game publisher, one of the importers recently, and he told me how it's really impacted them badly, because for gamers, you know, a lot of Xbox gamers, for example, now to all of a sudden spend upwards of 1,000 Rand on a game where before it was 600-700 Rand, and that's a massive difference, and especially if you have to make that jump within 2 years in terms of how you spend your money on games. I hope something like this has broader repercussions, so that you find our console games also not as expensive, but I don't think that's going to happen. Well done, Steam.
Cool, they're our winner this week. What's your pick, Richard?
So I had the opportunity to play with the new Apple TV yesterday. And I'm pleasantly surprised. I didn't use the old Apple TV much. I used the first generation for a few months, a few years ago. But I really like what Apple's done. The device, if you're familiar with the Apple TV and you know what it does, it's essentially a streaming box that allows you to stream the likes of Netflix and Hulu and that kind of thing. But with the new Apple TV, what they've really done is Apple's introduced Apple's version of appification on the TV. We've seen that kind of thing with smart TVs over the last few years. But the way that Apple's obviously done it is enabling their their iOS operating system to essentially become a TV OS, or they've just re-engineered it. So you have the same kind
of... What OS does it run?
TV OS. Which is a re-engineered iOS. So you have kind of all the bells and whistles you'll find on your iPad or iPhone, the apps and that kind of thing, just presented to you in a slightly different user interface, which I love. So obviously the gaming aspect of it is quite interesting. It's not the same type of games you can expect from a PlayStation or an Xbox, but if you like mobile games, and the iOS has some really good ones on the iTunes store, you'll have a lot of fun with the Apple TV on from a gaming point of view. When it comes to streaming, obviously it becomes a little bit more tricky, even though the Apple TV's been officially launched, or it's coming here officially. Not everybody's going to have access to the likes of Netflix, because you still need to route your DNS to unlock that geolocation. So once, if you are a Netflix user and you know how to do that kind of thing, you'll love the Apple TV, because it just makes it a lot easier. Set up Uno Tele or Media Hint, and you've got access to those things.
Well, Media Hint didn't work on Apple TV.
I think they've got some DNSs. I know they, with the recent update, they've got some DNSs I can do on routers and things. So I'm sure you'll be able to do it.
Okay.
We tried it with Uno Tele and it was fine. The remote is new, so what they've done is...
Oh, the remote is very cool.
They've redesigned the remote. It's got a little touchpad on it. It's 5 buttons, a volume rocker, home button, a Siri button.
Siri, that's the cool. That's the coolest thing about this new TV.
What you'll be able to do with Siri voice activation or voice navigation is navigate by voice. Ask Siri to play you the latest comedy starring your favorite actor, and it'll bring up the right relevant search. Another thing I like is you can actually tell Siri something like, please tell me what he just said on a movie.
What did he say?
He will rewind the clip and also enable closed caption, so you can hear or see what he said. It's very much a refined product from the previous Apple TV devices. It'll be interesting to see what developers do with the platform. Obviously, we haven't seen much development specifically for TVs on the Apple TV, but I think we're going to find, as with any platform, people are going to develop some interesting applications to run on the Apple TV. You can AirPlay from your mobile device, which is also great, a standard iOS feature.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. If you are entrenched in the Apple ecosystem, it makes a lot of sense to get the Apple TV.
Yeah.
If you don't have any Apple devices, maybe not so much, but it's still a good streaming,
yes.
a streamer device.
Yes.
Well worth checking out. I think, yeah, that was it. There was nothing really else that surprised me. It's pretty standard from that point of view, but it does it really well. You know, typical Apple fashion does what it does really well.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would buy one just yet because I've got a notebook connected up to my TV, and I was
gonna
a lot more power to that.
I was going
to
say that I still think that the best user interface and best experience for watching TV today is to connect a PC to your TV. I've got a micro PC. You know, a lot of companies are selling them now. HP's got them. Intel does the NUC. There are a lot of them, and they run full Windows. And the other option, of course, is to get a Mac Mini, although that gets quite pricey, especially with the rand at 14 to the dollar. But you can get one of these things. They're not going to be as cheap as an Apple TV, which is designed to be a low cost streaming box.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to spend a few thousand rand, but at the end of the day, I think it's actually worth it because you can keep all your content there. You can plug an external hard drive into it and watch whenever you want, whenever you want it. And you're not locked into a particular ecosystem because you've got the power of the web. Your web browser is effectively your interface to what you consume.
Now, that was one of the things with the Apple TV that that's always kind of been a niggle for me, is the fact you can't stream other legally downloaded content, if I can put it like that.
Yeah.
But Plex actually launched an app for Apple TV, which will allow you to stream from another device. So, you know, feather in the cap for that functionality, perhaps.
Okay.
But I would still go for a Mac for a notebook connected to my TV. The only downside to that is if you don't have a new or a notebook with an HDMI output, you might get lower resolution than you would using a newer notebook or an Apple TV.
Yeah.
So on mine, for example, my notebook, I'm outputting a VGA, but it's still sufficient. I'm still getting my 720p on my 720p TV, so I don't need anything more.
Is it your laptop, or do you have an old laptop that you can
It's an old laptop. Okay. No, It's a repurposed laptop.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a high-end.
If you want to get something that's ergonomic and stuff, you can get one of these mini PCs that will look like a set-top box or smaller. And you know, they got Bluetooth in, so you can connect a keyboard and a mouse and that sort of thing.
TV stands, you just pop it down the TV stand, you don't ever see what there is.
But this idea of putting Siri into the remote control is really interesting because I could see potential. Say you got a Windows box connected to your TV running Windows 10, I could see the potential for a third party device manufacturer to develop some sort of handheld remote for Windows with a built-in voice that speaks to Cortana, and then Cortana I don't know if Cortana is the right interface for that, but I can imagine there's a whole lot of opportunities here for third-party device manufacturers to build devices that people can speak into to control their TVs.
Definitely. The only thing that Apple TV doesn't have, which was a bit of an interesting oversight, I thought, was the fact it doesn't support 4K yet. I don't think it'll support 4K with firmware revision. From what I've seen online, the chips it won't support.
Does HDMI support 4K?
I think, yeah, but a specific version of HDMI.
Okay.
If you do some reading online, you'll
find... Of course it does. But the issue I've had, I've got a 4K monitor connected to my PC, and the issue I had was that HDMI only supported... I think only supported 30 hertz. May have been a limitation of the graphics card I was using there. And I know I had to use a DisplayPort connector and version 1.2 of DisplayPort to get 60 hertz refresh at 4K. And you have to have a graphics card that supports it, obviously.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I mean, it's probably a graphics card hardware reason why they didn't do 4K. I mean, it would have been nice to see a future-proofed box for once. But let's be honest, they're going to bring a version 2 of this out within 2 years, probably.
Yeah.
What I would really like to see, and I don't know if Apple will do this, but I would like to see some kind of collaboration with TV manufacturers where TV manufacturers develop dumb devices, not smart TVs. I don't want to see I don't want a smart TV because the technology gets so dated on those things. But you get a box like an Apple TV that you just slot into the back of the TV, and the right ports are there, and it becomes an Apple TV outright as opposed to a box that connects to it.
I don't think a TV manufacturers want to do that.
No, they won't.
They want to control the experience. They don't want Apple on their TVs.
But I mean, it could be generic for any operating system. Where dumb TV, you know, you can connect any. What's your favorite operating system? Windows. You get a Windows Nut box, and they just. I mean, I guess we're kind of seeing those things now. But it would be nice to see very deeper integration.
It's very, very early days. But yeah, I think the future lies in a full PC type of experience on your TV, controlled by voice.
Yeah. And also, I mean, the app thing to me is quite big. I mean, Netflix obviously has got an app. Hulu's got an app. All these streaming companies, ITV, you can get access to the content using the app. Now, imagine a South African scenario where DStv launches their app and you can do the same thing, seeing the local content through that. You know, I can see a lot of merit in doing it that way, as opposed to trying to provide these services over broadcast.
Yeah. Early days, but it's going to be interesting to see how it unfolds.
Yeah.
Cool. My pick this week, I'm picking another ebook. I know I picked one last time as well, but audiobook, sorry. And that's Digital Wars by Charles Arthur. He's a former tech editor for The Guardian newspaper in London. I think he's gone freelance now, I'm not sure. But interesting book. I got it from Audible, although I'm sure the Kindle or the paperback forest version is fine too. A interesting read. Talks about the fight over the last 15 years between Microsoft, Apple, and Google. They sort of fight for dominance, and goes into a lot of detail about you know, about the development of the iPhone. You know, how Microsoft squandered the early lead it had in smartphones, in smartphone operating systems, and smartphones, and the rise of Android, and how everyone you know, caught everyone basically flat-footed. Interesting read. A lot of the stuff on Apple I found was a little bit too taken from the keynote addresses and that sort of thing, not providing enough sort of behind-the-scenes views, which I suppose is difficult because Apple is such a notoriously secret company. So from that perspective, I was a little bit disappointed. But some of the insights he provided behind the scenes at Microsoft I think make the book worth listening to. Just talking about the ugly corporate culture at Microsoft and how it cost them market share in so many areas, and the strategic blunders made by Steve Ballmer while he was CEO. Quite interesting insights, stuff I hadn't heard before. So I think from that perspective, worth a listen. Also some interesting insights into the rise of Google. But if you're looking for new stuff on Apple, then this is not the book to read. But we are worth getting, and fairly well read. I found the reader on the Audible version a little nasally, but he was bearable. British reader, quite bearable actually. Perhaps I'm being a bit unfair. Worth getting. Maybe listen to the sample just to make sure you can tolerate the voice. If you can't get the printed edition,
Get the printed edition and tolerate your own voice.
So that's Charles Arthur, and the book is called Digital Wars. It's about a year and a half old now, so I'm reading a bit late, but still reasonably current and worth the read. And I'm busy with the Elon Musk book, so hopefully I'll have a chance to talk about that in the next podcast once I finish that one. Cool. The wind is really kicking up now. I'm worried it's interfered with the speaker and the recording of this podcast. So again, I apologize if it has. It'll be a lesson learned for next time. As always, if you've got any feedback on the show, we'd love to hear from you. You can drop us a mail at info@techcentral.co.za. From Rechon and myself, until next time, take care. Ciao.